All right, I want to thank everyone for joining tonight. We are on a few different streams and sources and feeding off of Facebook and also through YouTube. We thank everybody for joining, and this is in honor of Rabbi Dr. Norman Lamb, who just passed away last week. There'll be numerous memorials taking place. YU had theirs the other day, the Levaya itself, and a special series of Shirim last night. And I know that there's a community-wide event being planned as well, taking place, I believe, this Sunday or next Sunday. I'm not sure the exact date. We have Aryeh Goldberg, who is here with us, who is very close to Rabbi Lamb. Aryeh and I had the opportunity of the schus of having Shabbos together at Rabbi Lamb's house, which was a real treat to have Shabbos dinner there. There's so much to speak about. I'm going to be tomorrow at around 5:30. I'm going to be giving some of the Parsha gems from Rabbi Lamb, different nuggets of Divrei Torah. But I just want to give you a little background on who this great Gadol was, who this great human being was, and tell you some, you know, personal stories. Well, it starts with our chuppah, our wedding. My wife and I got married, and it was 2001. And when we got married, Rav Herschel Schechter was my Masadar Kedushin. And I get to the, you know, Chassan's Tish, and I'm there, and all of a sudden, you know, we invited Rabbi Lamb and many others. Rav Schechter turns to me and says, you have to ask Rabbi Lamb to be your Masadar Kedushin. I'm like, what do you mean I have to ask Rabbi Lamb? He was like, I asked you, you're my Rebbe, you were my Rebbe. What do you mean ask Rabbi Lamb? So Rav Schechter said, if Rabbi Lamb is here, he's your Masadar Kedushin. As he felt that was the kavod that was due to Rabbi Lamb, I turned to Rabbi Lamb and I asked him if he could be my Masadar Kedushin. I asked him at the Chassan's Tish. And he looked at me like I was crazy. Like, what kind of person doesn't think to plan ahead of time to have a Masadar Kedushin? You know, a Chassan is supposed to plan this months and months in advance of the wedding. And here I was the day of the minutes into the wedding already turning to Rabbi Lamb and asking. But I couldn't say that I really asked Rav Schechter, but then, so I had to just bite the bullet and look like the fool and say, well, I didn't map this out ahead of time, but, you know, now that you're here. But it really testifies to how my Rebbe, Rav Herschel Schechter, viewed Rabbi Lamb. On one occasion when one of the great Gedolim at the time who had disparaged Rabbi Lamb for one of his public talks, I remember shir the next morning with Rav Schechter. Rav Schechter, you know, opened his Gemara, he looked up, and then he went off. And he said, the next time that person, who was an esteemed, you know, Rosh Hashiva in his own right, he said, the next time that person wants to comment about one of our Gedolim, let him come ask me a Shaila first. And he spent the rest of Shir defending the greatness of Rabbi Lamb and what he represented to all of us. So Rabbi Lamb, just to give you a background, and it's the purpose of today, again, is to set the stage who he was and a little bit of some of Rabbi Lamb's impact. Rabbi Lamb was one of four. He grew up in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. He was born in 1927, one of the greatest years in American history. And he went to Masifta Torah Vadas. His grandfather, Rav Baumel, was a great posek, great to say for Emek Halacha. And his grandfather said, after you graduate from Torah Vadas, when you get old enough, you're going over to Yeshiva College. And while he was there at Yeshiva College, his initial intention, Rabbi Lamb, was to get a degree in chemistry. He was the valedictorian of the secular side of the school. He was valedictorian 1949, and he did get a degree in chemistry. He took graduate courses at the Polytechnic Institute of Brooklyn. And one wonders if he would have kept pursuing, you know, the world. You wonder sometimes when people end up in different places than where they end up, what if Rabbi Lamb would never have actually finished, you know, or changed his mind to enter into the world of the rabbinate, into the world of building yeshivas? What if Rabbi Lamb would have stayed in that world of chemistry and engineering, which was his initial interest? He was convinced by Dr. Belkin, who was the second president of Yeshiva University. He was convinced by Dr. Belkin to join the faculty at Yeshiva University. Dr. Belkin thought it would be fascinating to have someone who was such an erudite Talmud Chacham, who at the same time was so steeped in the world of secular knowledge, which was an ideal for Yeshiva University at the time. At that moment, Rabbi Lamb got very caught up in the fervor of the YU culture, the YU Sviva. And he ended up going for smicha. He ended up going for a doctorate. Rabbi Lamb has the rare record. If you ever ask this on a game show, who is the only person ever to receive a doctorate and smicha from Rav Soloveitchik. It's only Rabbi Lamb. No one else has ever done that. There are many who have smicha from Rabbi Lamb, from Rabbi Soloveitchik. There are a few who actually have a doctorate from Rav Soloveitchik when he was in the Revel graduate school. But Rabbi Lamb is the only one to actually receive smicha and a doctorate from Rav Soloveitchik, the family says he was very, very proud about. He was a pulpit rabbi for 25 years. His first position was he was a rabbi in Springfield, Massachusetts. In 1952, he became the assistant rabbi at the Jewish Center, one of the greatest of all American shuls. And he ended up becoming, and there the assistant rabbi, he was the assistant rabbi to one of the greatest rabbis in America, Rabbi Young, Rabbi Leo Young. And eventually he became the lead rabbi in 1959, where he served as the rabbi of the shul till 1976. Why did he stop serving as the rabbi of the shul? Because 1976 was the year that he became president of Yeshiva University. Yeshiva University was a school that was suffering tremendously financially, enrollment, in every avenue, in every way you could imagine. And what Rabbi Lamb was able to achieve by really reinvigorating the school, having a vision for the yeshiva, and really altering its identity, informing really the truth of what YU was established for. And it's specifically the leadership that Rabbi Lamb showed. And this is what made Rabbi Lamb very unique. And people talk about Rabbi Lamb's abilities in fundraising, in every area. But at the end of the day, Rabbi Lamb's main success was that he wanted YU to match the vision of what he thought the school actually represented. And Rabbi Lamb was the founder of the Tradition Journal and the Torah Umada Journal. Torah Umada, which is Torah and secular knowledge, really became one of Rabbi Lamb's mantras. His famous book, by the way, his doctoral thesis was on the subject of Torah Lishma. What's Torah Lishma? Torah Lishma is a concept that was made famous by Reb Chaim Volozhiner. It's not created by Reb Chaim Volozhiner, student of the Vilna Gaon. Torah Lishma means learning Torah for Torah's sake or for God's sake, not for some academic pursuit. And there was a little bit of a machlokas, how one is supposed to approach Torah learning between the Hasidic world, as is written up in the Sefer Introduction to the Iglei Tal by the Sochatchover, versus Reb Chaim Volozhin in his Nefesh HaChaim. Two different streams of thought on how to understand the concept of Lishma when it comes to Torah. Rabbi Lamb's doctoral thesis was on the subject of tracing Reb Chaim Volozhin's understanding of what it means to have Torah Lishma. Rabbi Lamb wrote his great book, Torah Umada, which really is part of his great legacy. Along with Yeshiva University, his work, Torah Umada, was his great legacy. The book is incredible because what it does is it breaks down the different understandings and the different understandings of what it means to have Lishma. What the concept means of balancing Torah and the secular world. There are different visions. There's a mystical vision that Rav Kook had for the world. And Rabbi Lamb ultimately says parallels with Rav Hirsch's world. And he says, well, why is this any different? Rav Hirsch saw the world as one mountain that needed to be conquered. And on that top of that mountain is a person with Torah and secular studies. Rav Soloveitchik saw it as two separate mountains. Rabbi Lamb gets into all these different ideas, all these different elements of what Torah Umada actually is. And at the end of the day, for Rabbi Lamb, it was all part of Torah. It was all, that's what people don't understand. It wasn't Rabbi Lamb was saying that you should take a few minutes for Torah in your day, a few minutes for secular studies in your day, and you're giving people a vision of something they can't do. You're asking them to have a chavrusa in Torah studies, and you're asking them to have a chavrusa in literature, and it's an impossible ideal that you're asking the Jewish people to live with. And it wasn't true. It was a misunderstanding of the ideal of Torah Mata. Torah Mata meant that all knowledge of the world is subsumed under that rubric called Torah. It's all Torah. It's all Torah. Torah is, by the way, and people start thinking for a moment, well, that sounds very radical, and it's very, you know, an understanding of Torah that's against, you're telling me math is Torah? Yes. Look at the Gemara and Sukkah. Right there at the beginning, Vav talks about how to use pi. Tosfos talks about how to use pi as a way of understanding. Mada is all over. Science is all over Torah. It's part of Torah. Rav Schechter always points out that you can't be a proper kashrus agency without poskim who don't understand the chemistry of how these different factories are run and the different labs are run and products and foods are being prepared. Mada is an essential part of understanding Torah. Rav Huttner put it this way. Rav Huttner said, Torah is, imagine the sun. When you look down on the floor, you see light around you. There's light. That light is the light that emanates from the sun. Torah is the sun. All other studies are light that emanates from that original sun. These are all variations of ideas that Rabbi Lam put into one magnificent work called Torah Umada. And it really is an essay that traces the different types of ideals. What is Torah Umada? What does it represent? And it was a masterpiece. Rabbi Lam has so many amazing books. I want to tell you about a few of them and some of the ideas. There's a book on Hasidism. It's incredible. Rabbi Lam, who part of his family was Hasidic, felt a strong connection and affinity towards Hasidic thought. But Rabbi Lam, being an academic scholar, he wanted to put together the first significant book of academic scholarship as a survey of all of Hasidic history. And it's incredible. Tracing all the key pieces you need to know from the... anyone who doesn't have it in the library, I recommend them and pick it up. Go on Amazon, check it out. It's an incredible body of work. The analysis that was done, the pieces that were looked at, classics from the Noam Elimelech, the Baal Shem Tov, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Rav Shneur Zalman Liadi. It's incredible. There's a lesser known work that Rabbi Lam has, which is so terrific. It's called Shema. And it's an analysis of the Shema Yisrael prayer. Each chapter is a gem, I have a set of 5 Svarim on the Parsha that Aryeh Goldberg, who's here with us, got for my son's bar mitzvah. Here it is, the speeches of Rabbi Lam on the Parsha, Drushas on every Parsha. We'll get to his Drushas in a moment. I want to talk about that separately. But so Rabbi Lam has this great work called Shema. He's got a great work on Hasidism. So I would start with any collection of Rabbi Lam's writings. You need his book, Torah Umada. I would pick up his Sefer on Shema, and I would get that book on Hasidism, which was incredible as well. His books on the Parshios are essential and unbelievable. Now, let's talk about one of Rabbi Lam's passion was what you call Drush. Let me explain what Drush is for those that don't understand. And he lamented that this was an art that was falling out of use. See, when a rabbi gets up and a rabbi gives a shmooze, right? A rabbi gets up there and he gives a shmooze on a parsha, okay? Now, there's a few things a rabbi could do with a parsha. I'll give you 3 options. The first option, the rabbi can take an idea, and this is a Musar shmooze. So let's say, for example, Nasa, which is this week's Parsha. Some of you asking for Parsha gems. Parsha's Nasa is about the Birkas Kohanim. And the Birkas Kohanim, it says it was done with shalom, with peace, with love. So I can give you a Musar shmooze right now about the importance of loving your fellow Jew, loving each other. That's a drusha of the style called Musar shmooze. Style number 2. Another style is a shir. I can give you a shir right now on when we listen to the Kohanim do the bracha and they give us a bracha. When we listen, what halachic mechanism is being used to give us a bracha, to give us that bracha, to allow that bracha to be shower upon us? Is it shomea ka'ona? Is it hir hor kedibur? And there's a whole debate as to what that is. That's a drasha. That's a shir. Rabbi Lam said that when the rabbi speaks in shul, the primary focus needs to be on the art of drush. Okay, let me give you a quote of what Rabbi Lam said here. Rabbi Lam said the following. Okay, he has a great article called Notes of an Unrepentant Darshan. He said, the art and science of homiletics, that's called drush, have fallen into disfavor and even disuse in the course of a generation or two. Sociologists of contemporary Orthodox Judaism have yet to take note of this phenomena, although it will surely someday merit at least a footnote in some historian's review of American Orthodox rabbinate. Rabbi Lam was into restoring the power of drush. Let me explain what that is. And by the way, the reason he said we slipped away from it, he says, number one, he thinks American Judaism valued the Rosh Yeshiva over the Shul Rabbi. They were impressed by the Rosh Yeshiva more than the Shul Rabbi. Number two, was that American society, many segments lost their verbal potency, the way to clarify concepts with words, using the art of your speech, your dignity in what you, the words you choose are so pregnant with ideas. How you express that was so important to Rabbi Lam. That's why I'm going on a sidebar here, but I was once at a debate at YU. It wasn't a debate, it was more a discussion about the future of outreach in America. And the panel was being led by one of the one of the leaders of outreach in America, Rabbi Effie Buchwald, who runs the NJOP, National Jewish Outreach Program. And it was Lubavitch representative, an Eshet Torah representative, YU, and he screamed at the YU representative, and he said, "You really dropped the ball." Because why? What do you mean you dropped the ball? Because YU from the beginning, its mission was Torah Umada. If anyone had a language that would have been able to communicate to people in the streets, to scholars in their businesses, academics, people at all levels, it were the people who were raised and trained within YU. And Rabbi Lam lamented that loss of a verbal potency. He also said, "I suspect that many of the younger men who express a measure of disdain for Drush, it's simply because they have not heard quality Drush, limited experience." Now let me explain to you what Drush is, and that's when we come to this set of Sfarim. Drushos Lidoros by Rabbi Lam, 5 volumes. These are unbelievable. They are chock full with incredible, incredible drush. So drush is the art of taking a phrase in the Torah and learning something from the phrase, extracting. Drush means lidrush, means to seek, to investigate, to pull out from it. So I opened a random page just now, and here's where it says. It says from Kohelet. Eis lahasos ve'eis ladaber, a time to do and a time to speak. Eis lachshos ve'eis ladaber, a time for passivity and a time to speak, right? Eis lachshos, a time for silence and a time for ladaber, to speak. It's time for silence and a time for speech. Rabbi Lam interprets this as, again, the words are eis lachshos, a time for quiet, eis ladaber, a time to speak. Rabbi Lam took this line to be speaking very much to what was happening in the streets and to talk about the notion of there's a time for us to sit back and to process and to listen. And then there's a time for us to speak up and to protest. Wow, isn't that powerfully relevant when we think about what's happening right now in the world and what's happening around us just in terms of speaking up? Jews sometimes get uncomfortable when people speak up. Quiet, go back home, everybody back home, enough. What do you got to make a noise about this for? Jews often get very disturbed by it. And Rabbi Lam thought that was the drush that he pulled out from that pasuk was, yes, there are some times when you have to sort of hold back, when a person has to be more with restraint, but there are times when a person has to speak out. Anti-racism was a major theme for Rabbi Lam, first, one of the main areas where it happened first is an untitled drusha that he has from 1954. It's one of his earliest sermons. In 1954, Rabbi Lam was at the time the rabbi of Springfield's congregation, Kadima. And there was that was the name of the newspaper at the time. He was the rabbi of the congregation. Now, the Kadima, which was a local newspaper, advertised houses that were marketed to exclude applications. And what happened was there was exclusion of applications from Jews. So Rabbi Lam gave an impassioned drusha where he focused on American anti-Semitism's ability to engender a religious inferiority complex among Jews. So Rabbi Lam examined the responsibilities of living in a free society for a Jew. What's our responsibility? And he took the pasuk, Vayikra Chafei, Ukaratem Dror Ba'aretz, and you shall proclaim liberty throughout the land. What's the end of the pasuk? For all its inhabitants. And relying on an interpretation of Rashi, Rabbi Lam interpreted the freedom granted by this as a freedom of movement, right? The slave is free to live wherever he likes. But then Rabbi Lam says, if you look at the rest of the pasuk, the second half of the pasuk is just as important. It says, you shall go, every one of you, to your property, and every one of you to your family. And this is golden drush from Rabbi Lam. He says, the Torah is telling the slave, with his newfound freedom, he has to choose to go back and associate with those, the ancestors of his faith. Every thinking man and woman in a free society chooses to live by a set of beliefs. But as the Torah indicates, those beliefs have to be judged by the degree to which they reflect either the worship of Hashem or something else. And you choose. He says, some of our people have bowed before the God of communism only to learn that now its true colors show when it puts forth a restricted sign. Some have put their faith and sought redemption in the naive 19th century belief in progress and science only to see bellowing forth mushroom clouds, nuclear. Some have tried ethical culture. Others have tried assimilation. They are wanderers, aimlessly hopping from station to station on the great road, which leads nowhere. Come back, says Hashem, each to your heritage, to Torah, to your family, to Israel. Unbelievable. The freedom that a Jew has in America calls each and every one of us. It calls us, it beckons us not to live a life hefker of Torah, but on the contrary, to live a life that is very much connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the ideals of the Torah. Rabbi Lam was so versatile in so many areas. Rabbi Lam had deep and beautiful things to say. There was an amazing eulogy that Rabbi Lam gave for a wonderful individual. His name was Mikey Butler. This was January 27th, 2004. I saved the notes of it from back when it was given. Mikey Butler had a degenerative disease. He was a YU student who passed away at a young age. And Rabbi Lam said in that eulogy he gave, and Rabbi Lam was a master eulogizer. For those who know what that means to give speeches when someone passes. And Rabbi Lam says the following: what an amazing young man Mikey was, a truly unique individual, one of our most outstanding students. His life deserves to become a legend at YU. And this is what he quoted the Gemara in Yoma 35b. The Gemara in Yoma talks about a passage, about a section about not learning Torah, excuses for not learning Torah. Right? The Gemara talks about Tanur Rabbanan, Oni va'ashir v'rasha boin ladin. La'ani omrim lo mipnei ma lo asakta b'Torah. Turned to the poor person and said, why didn't you learn Torah? He says, I was poor. I had to go raise money all the time. So we say, wait a second, but was anybody more poor than Hillel? And yet he learned. To the rich, why didn't you learn Torah? They'll say to the rich, imamer ha'shir ha'iti v'torat ha'iti b'nechasein. Well, I was rich and I was making money and I had to build up my fortune. Was nobody richer than Rebbe Lazar? Yet he learned. To the Russia, why didn't you learn Torah? Well, I was so good looking and I was busy with my Yetzer Hara. Well, was anybody more good looking than Yosef HaTzadik? And on Yosef HaTzadik, every day, Ashes Potiphar tried to take him away, but he never lost his way. Said Rabbi Lam, and this is beautiful. This is what a hesped is. This is how you eulogize. This is how you drush. All of it comes together for Rabbi Lam. To that, I would add, Mike Klum Hayita Yoter Cholama Mikey. Was anybody sicker than Mikey? No. Yet Mikey found a way to be connected to Yiddishkeit. Mikey Butler, Machayev Cholam. Mikey Butler was Machayev, all those who claim I didn't feel well and couldn't learn. No, he found a way. He found a way. He said Mikey was a sick man all his life, but paradoxically, he was one of the healthiest people I have ever met. I mean, it's incredible. Rabbi Lam's words dance off the page. You'll never see anything written by Rabbi Lam that lacked its power. And his speeches many times had reverberations in the realm of politics. Rabbi Lam delivered a very important paper. It was a lecture at the Ideological Seminary of the World Union of Jewish Students in Finland in 1969. Rabbi Lam convened sort of a gathering to understand the different movements within Judaism. Rabbi Lam's job at this convention was to explain the ideology and the position of Neturei Karta. Now, Neturei Karta are the ones who are against the state of Israel. What makes this piece so brilliant is that Rabbi Lam understood that his role with it was to be able to express a position, was to be able to explain the Shita in a clear and articulate way, in a way that only Rabbi Lam could. It was a magnificent piece. Rabbi Lam went through the four basic tenets of Neturei Karta belief of time for human passivity, that we let Hashem be charged. We don't do anything. And Rabbi Lam went through each piece. If one is curious to find that article, they find in one of the editions of Tradition. I'm pretty sure it was printed there as well. Rabbi Lam's essay that I think had such a profound impact on myself was his article, The Makings of a Ben Torah. It was his lecture that he delivered in the 1983 Chag HaSmicha. The Chag HaSmicha is every couple of years YU convenes all those who are getting smicha. And Rabbi Lam delivered this monumental speech called The Makings of a Ben Torah. And he starts his words with, to be a rabbi, one must first of all be a Ben Torah. What or who is a Ben Torah? What or who is a Ben Torah? The translation, a scholar of the Torah, does not give the term justice. It's too restrictive. A better definition would be a Torah person, bearing in mind that one cannot truly be a Torah person without first being an accomplished Torah scholar. So excellent point. Ben Torah can't just mean you know Torah, because knowing the Torah sounds like one of the things you need on the list to become a Ben Torah, right? Because you are a Ben Torah. So you need to know Torah before you become a Ben Torah. So what then are the extra ingredients beyond Talmudic learning that go up to make a Torah person, a Torah personality? So he went into an idea of avas haTorah, love of Torah, an absolute prerequisite in the mentality of Ben Torah. But then there's avas Yisrael, love of your people. That love complements your love of Torah. Remember always that Torah was not meant exclusively to provide for your own spiritual needs. This is amazing. I'll say it again. Remember always that Torah was not meant exclusively to provide for your own spiritual needs, your own religious integrity, your own intellectual creativity. No, it's a samachayim, Tamar and Kedushin. It's an elixir of life, but it's a medicine of which you must be not only the consumer, but also the pharmacist. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Torah is not just meant for you to be the consumer, but you also the pharmacist. The problem with too many of us in the yeshivot is that we have somehow managed to assimilate excessively the spirit of the times. Society today is highly narcissistic. I want to pause there because this is a pivotal moment in the time I remember being at YU with Rabbi Lam. Society has become very narcissistic, so that even the learning has become for myself. Rabbi Lam's famous speech, which he got in trouble for, was the caveman speech. He said the person staying in yeshiva and just learning is a caveman. And he got criticized. You're calling the Vilna Gaon a caveman? You're calling the Chafetz Chaim a caveman? There was criticism. One of the YU Rosh Yeshivas even criticized Rabbi Lam. He later apologized for it. But you read this piece from Rabbi Lam, this speech on what makes a Ben Torah, and you understand exactly what Rabbi Lam was saying. A Torah that's introverted, that's meant to stay mine, that's caveman. That's narcissistic. The Vilna Gaon may have learned in isolation, but every one of his teachings, all his writings, influenced the world over. That's not a caveman. It was meant to help others. Rabbi Lam's idea bears out in a beautiful pilpul from Rabbi Tzala Zsolti. Rabbi Tzala Zsolti asks why the Shulchan Aruch says that one who thinks Divrei Torah does not make a bracha, but one who writes Divrei Torah does make a bracha. You think Torah, you don't make a bracha, but you write it, you do make a bracha. Why was the difference? So says Rabbi Tzala Zsolti, because Torah needs to be Torah that can be given over. If you're just thinking it, it's not give overable. When you write it down, it's transmittable. That's exactly what Rabbi Lam is saying. Torah has to be such that it could be given over and delivered. What Rabbi Lam was doing with Yeshiva University was building an institution of which could deliver a variation or a form of packaging of Torah that could change the world and literally would have the greatest impact on so many Rabbanim and so many people, so many communities, so many ideologues. And that was Rabbi Lam's vision. It was a vision he understood from the Rav. It was a vision he understood from Dr. Belkin. And it was a vision he dedicated his life to. Rabbi Lam was an incredible human being, an Adam Gadol, one of the great Gedolim of our times. You will look back at all the works that he wrote over and over. I asked him a few years ago, what was he busy with now, specifically after the YU chapter of his life? And he said, I'm just trying to download everything off my mind as much as possible before it's too late. And certainly in the last, in the earlier part of the last decade, Rabbi Lam was able to produce with the help of his family so many great works, so many great teachings, so many great Divrei Torah, all of which is being shared and is there online. You could find it. And Rabbi Lam was truly an incredible individual. I thank you all for joining tonight. I hope you join me tomorrow to hear some Parsha gems from Rabbi Lam at 5:30 p.m. Thank you. Have a good evening.